Greetings, everyone, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, I'm delighted to have Dr. Carmen Bolter return to the show. Carmen is the creative fire behind The Pyramid Code. She's the director, producer, and writer of the series. Carmen has had an unshakable passion for Egypt, traveling there at least 27 or more times by now. And Carmen is also the author of Angel and Archetypes, an evolutionary map of feminine consciousness. She is presently preparing for a very special, groundbreaking trip to Egypt on 11-11-11, where her group has been granted permission for private time inside the Great Pyramid. She's also working on two new books, one co-authored with William Henry. To find out more about this once-in-a-lifetime trip, go to www.pyramidcode.com. But now, let's welcome Carmen back to the show. Hi, Carmen. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Lance?
I'm good, too. Now, let's just see how good we are tonight. You've been very busy since we last spoke. I was amazed to find out that you've done, you're just doing so much. Would you like to fill us in on some of the details so we can find out what you're up to? Because it's always exciting. Your life is an exciting life.
Well, on Thursday I received a contract from New Page Books, and I'm co-authoring a book with Xavient Hayes called Aliens in Ancient Egypt.
Ooh.
And it's due, our draft is due on January 15th, so it's going to come out in 2012, and I think pretty much everybody's ready to talk about that. So we'll be looking at the Amarna period and the distended skulls and the anomalies and how Hatshepsut talks about being a starseed and how all that happened. So the book with William Henry is called Lost Keys of the Sacred Feminine, Decoding Dendera.
Wow.
And that's looking at the newly cleaned ceiling of Dendera that used to be like looking into coffee, and you couldn't see any much more than outlines, and there's incredible precision. And some pictures from that are on my website.
Good.
And the other thing I'm doing is I just saw today for the first time the architecture for interactiveu.com, which is an online learning and social action network. So I've been teaching online for 10 years at a university in Taiwan and at the University of Calgary. And both those contracts are over, so I'm going freelance. And I've got 12 faculties and 4 courses in each, and mostly professors who are tired of the school system and the workings of institutions as opposed to true education and focus on students.
Right.
And so that's going to roll out. There's a lot of internal building that has to happen, but that's going to be rolling out soon.
Oh,
and,
good.
And I'm doing a pre-course called The Pyramid Code through Evolver Intensives, and that'll be November 27th to January 15th. So as soon as I come back from Egypt, that'll roll out. So it's really something. People are enjoying online learning. Evolver Intensives has been getting as many as 500 people per course.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and this is going to be their 5th course. And they launch things well in advance and do a lot of publicity on it. So I'm excited about all those projects for sure.
Good. Well, now, is there a lot of preparation to do? I've read the itinerary for the 2-week trip to Egypt, and why did you, I'm going to ask you the question, why you chose the propitious time of 11-11-11, and also what kind of intent you have in terms of what you want to accomplish with the group inside the pyramids and outside the pyramids?
Well, it's a 3-trip process, so we were there already at 10-10-10.
Oh.
And that was the resurgence of the sacred feminine, finally and completely. All of these are ascension portals, so 11-11-11 is a gateway, and it's also really close to the end of the last step, it's past the last step of the Mayan calendar. There, according to Joseph Kalaman, it's the end of the 9th wave on October 28th.
Right.
So we're really going to be into some interesting energy.
Yeah.
And then 12-12-12 is, again, another ascension portal. And I had been to Egypt for 12-12 when Pluto went out of Scorpio into Sagittarius in 1994 with 278 people. And so it seems fitting to do that again at this juncture, but then at the alignment on December 21st, 2012, at sunset Giza, which is where the exact alignment happens, we'll be outside around the pyramid. And my vision is to have enough hands to hold all the way around the Great Pyramid. We'll see if we can do that.
Wow.
It's a nice idea. I may have some Egyptians in there as well.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. That'd be wonderful.
So we're in there at one. We're in the Great Pyramid on 11/11 at 1/11. We go in there at 1 o'clock, so we'll be settled. And it really is about dropping, letting go, and not looking back anymore. I think we've been spending a long time understanding the problem. You know, chemtrails meets pharmacological, pharmaceuticals,
right,
and everything else in between, war and bloodbath and killing from death. And I think we need to look forward now.
Yeah.
You know, blood for life and into restructuring a model for an empowered humanity.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I see that as a real gateway to that.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And it seems that a lot of people are saying something very similar to that, that it's time to turn away from the problem and move into creative solutions and imagining what it is, what kind of world we'd like to have, and
uh-huh,
what kind of world, you know, isn't working presently. And obviously that's just about everything that's being done by the controllers. So we know that that doesn't work, and there's no question about that now. We've had billions of years to experience it, and it has never worked. It continues to break down. It works for them in terms of controlling the masses, but unfortunately, the masses don't get a very good break out of all that. So, now, your book with William Henry, I know he does a lot of work with stargates. He's very interested in stargates. Have you followed some of his writing?
Oh, absolutely. I've been following his work for a long time, which is... it was kind of a natural thing for us to work together. What you see on the ceiling of, and I'm not talking about the round zodiac that's been on the ceiling of Dendera all along. I'm talking about the first hypostyle hall, which just used to be the brown, and now they've cleaned it. And when you look at it, it's a star map. It's a zodiac. It's looking at the precessional cycle, and it's got all these so-called solar boats that look like wormholes if you look at the physics of it.
Wow.
With various beings moving through and stars above them.
Wow.
So Stargate, yeah, it certainly makes sense, but it's a multidimensional reality. But then you see these curious beings in other sections of that same temple that have like a body double or a body triple.
Oh.
And so we're looking at, you know, how the ancient Egyptians were really well versed in moving between dimensions,
mm-hmm,
but also
mm-hmm,
understanding what happened when we dropped our earthly clothing and carried on as a spirit being, and then how we reincarnated and what that was all about. And so I think that we're becoming more well versed in a vocabulary that will take us into an understanding of a completely expanded and sophisticated way of being and thinking that the ancient Egyptians were really in, you know, had a lot of prowess with. And so we tend to look through our patriarchal lenses and, you know, tell ourselves we're the smartest we've ever been, and that's just not adding up anymore.
No, of course not. It's actually the opposite.
That's right.
But stargates are, I've heard also that there are a lot of people that are looking to various events going on during this time. Some are already starting to experience out-of-body experiences, and I wouldn't be surprised if there were going to be many things to talk about, or to experience that will be beyond the norm if we're open to it.
Well, and I think it's already started. You know, it's not like there's a line you draw in the sand and then, you know, we're dense on one side of the line and take one step and all of a sudden we're completely enlightened.
Right.
I think that we've been lifting the veils and the collective has been getting more involved in these ideas of out-of-body experiences, and some of us have been having them for decades.
Mm-hmm.
But when more and more people are experiencing that and understanding how the energy is shifting them, you know, then it like I said, it moves into the collective. And instead of the collective unconscious, as Jung talked about, I think it's becoming collective consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And more people are well-versed in the issues that we've been facing and have an innate sense of what we should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the powers that were that are blocking things. And, you know, I've been saying every time I've been on the air with you, their time is done. They may be still sitting in their you know, seats of Congress or whatever, but it's high time they got out of there and made way for something new. But part of the issue is we haven't spent a lot of time creating this model for an empowered humanity. It's been too much of disempowering everyone.
Right, right. And as I understand it, we were the ones that contracted with them in the first place to create the experience of duality here, and they simply got attached to the position of being godlike in relation to us and having all the keys to the kingdom, and now they don't want to give them up. It's like, you know, they stole Daddy's Cadillac, and they're not going to give it back. So,
well, I think we're going to see some pretty twisty-turny, magical events that are going to shift things, and nobody knows how it's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I absolutely right. I used to think I had some clues, but the more I'm around, the more I say, I don't know. I have no idea what will happen. Anything is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And into anything and everything. So,
well, and also there's been all these, you know, stories from the mainstream media. They give us a story, and then, you know, internet conspiracy theories will, you know, break that down and say it's something else. Like, I'm even thinking about the Twin Towers and thermite and an explosion and blah. And then somebody comes along and says it was none of that.
Right.
You know, both, you know, the conspiracy theory and the other one, maybe the conspiracy theory is a little more plausible, but we've really been kept in the dark, and there's been an awful lot of holograms and, you know, projections and Project Blue Beam and fake UFO sightings, and they're going to come and get us, and all the stuff about Elenin that I never really bought into at all.
Yeah.
All of a sudden it fizzled. And so we really are getting more and more opportunities to get mixed up, which is why what we need to do is cultivate our own sense of discernment.
Yeah.
Where do we feel that in our body? I think everybody knows when they're being lied to.
Yes.
And you may kind of dance around that and say, oh, well, maybe I'm making that up. But, you know, it doesn't feel good to be lied to. And it also doesn't feel good to be confused. But one of the main tactics that they've used against us is confusion and absurdity. And there's plenty of that around.
Right. Right, right. And as has been pointed out, they use a problem reaction solution as a formula. And yeah, simply repeating the same mantra, you know, over and over and over. If you say it enough times, then people just automatically buy into it. I mean, they get brainwashed into believing that that's the way it is if you say something enough times, even when it's been proven to be wrong. So,
right. Well, it's repetition. But the other thing is that there's five major corporations: Disney, AOL, Time Warner, and they control everything. The media. In terms of TV, movies, print media, books, and magazines.
Yeah.
And so they've got their agenda, and when you see the same storyline through all of those things, newspapers as well, radio, and you go, well, it must be true. Internet stands alone, and then they put agents into places on Internet to put little seeds of misinformation around, and then we may say, okay, 85% of it's right, but which 15% of it's wrong?
Right.
Without teaching people how to wake up their own discernment.
Yes, yes. Well, and then, of course, there's the additional problem that most people are in denial and are not interested in finding out more, because that would shatter their illusions and belief systems.
Well, and the other thing is that we have a window of tolerance. And when you see a beached whale and an oil slick duck or whatever, like, we kind of shut down. Like, we can't stand to see Mother Earth being ripped apart.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we do is seek distraction. When the psyche can't resolve an issue, it seeks distraction.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go outdoors of compensation, like extra shopping or, you know, overeating or whatever, and distract ourselves. And what that does as well, though, is it separates us. So when we can't process, we tend to isolate. And what we really need to do is bind together and do social action and do something to move us forward. Mm-hmm. But this business of isolating us and making us feel despair and then we're too tired to go do anything about it, you know, everything works hand in hand, and this has been a plan, and they didn't mind waiting 5,000 years.
Yep.
And it looks like they're winning because so many people are asleep, but so many people are awake. So
yes.
We just have to watch it play out.
Yes, I agree with you on that one. I agree with you totally on that. Yes, and of course, the fear card is one of the biggies that they like to haul out as often as possible. I noticed that there's a new movie out that is about the bird flu, and there's a new bird flu out. It just happens to be simultaneous with the movie. So now there's going to be some new attempt to scare the bejesus out of us with death. But we are immortal and infinite beings, and we do not die. The body dies, and it returns to the dust that it came from, but we go on. So consciousness goes on. I believe it does.
Oh, absolutely. But not that many people are dying from the bird flu either. I lived through SARS in Taiwan when I was working over there as a professor. And it was nothing, and I knew it was nothing. And, you know, everybody had to wear a mask going on the train, and we probably needed gloves more than masks. But,
right.
You know, there was only like a handful of people that passed, and more people passed from the regular flu, and they keep trying it and trying it. And, you know, they were doing all the Muslim terrorist thing, and now they're doing Norwegian blonde hair, blue-eyed. I mean, they just keep switching around, and basically I call it CNN mentality. The only place you're safe is on your own couch.
Right. Yeah, really. That's funny. So what are some of the important key elements that will be in your books? Obviously, I've hoped that somebody would come out and finally say the A word in relation to the pyramids and these ancient sites that could only have been assisted with through some kind of external help. Mascar, but it's not. It's the Nazca lines.
The Nazca lines.
Nazca lines. Yeah.
Well, and they all fit together. Like it. Yes. I mean, you can't walk the Nazca lines and notice anything. So either someone was on the ground making an image that could be seen from the heavens, or someone was in the heavens looking down. I mean, you have to be a mile up.
Right.
5,000 feet up to be able to see these images. And so the other thing is that they represent the zodiac and constellations, because there's 22 of them. So Orion is the spider, for example.
I have in my possession a small rock that has the spider carved into it that came from that area. And a friend was a collector, and he left it to me. And it feels to me like a remote control device. It's very interesting, and it's got some minuscule, if you look at it with a microscope, you can see writing. But it's a very strange piece of rock, but it is the spider. And in fact, and then I have a pyramid right here made in Egypt that has some pyramid sand and some rocks from the pyramids that I keep handy just because it's from Egypt, and that's as close as I'm going to get, unfortunately. I would just love to go with you on that trip. It sounds like just the most wonderful, wonderful time. Anybody that can go with you just should make the plunge and do it, because there's nobody that I would rather take that tour with and be with in those areas than with you.
Well, thank you. And let's come back to Nazca Lines meets Egypt, because Ica, Peru, is very close to the Nazca Lines. And 13,000 of these stone carvings were found that showed different star systems, the Pleiades, Gondwanaland, when all the Earth masses were together, brain surgery with blood transfusion from a pregnant woman, man riding dinosaurs. This is Javier Cabrera's collection. and he's now passed on, and a friend of mine knows the new people who are taking care of the stones. So he was given one, much like your spider, as a paperweight, and then he went seeking others and ended up collecting 11,000 of them. And they
wow.
speak of medicine, they speak of sexual practices, they speak of history, and it goes on and on and on, flora and fauna, and basically it's this record. And so, of course, people went out to say that they were fake. I have been there,
yeah.
And what Dr. Cabrera had was a stone with a skull that was distended, that was natural, and then a whole closet of different spaceship things, and you know that he didn't show the public, but of course he was definitely wanting to see what me and my little group had the thought about it.
Oh.
But this business of distended skulls seems to be that there was a race of beings or starseed. We think that Nefertiti and Akhenaten came from Sirius, and the distended skull actually allowed for an elongated pineal gland that looked like an acorn, which is actually an internal eye,
mm-hmm.
so the third eye, but it's actually inside the center of the head. But that's also corresponding to the Holy of Holies in any of the temples of Egypt. So let's
mm-hmm.
say you walk into the first hypostyle hall through at the feet and walk through the cavities of the human body, and the holiest place is the pineal gland. So we know that there's a lot of artificial skulls that have been, when babies were born and their skulls were still soft. The Incas and various places around the world, and as it turns out, all over the world, were making the heads distended. And you can say it's stylized, but I think what they were doing is emulating the wisdom and the abilities of the beings that had well-developed pineal glands, which would allow them transmutation of the atoms, so manifestation. They were able to be highly intuitive and psychic, telepathic.
Mm.
They were able to do alchemy and bilocation, teleportation. So all of this fits, then, with anti-gravity.
Mm.
And I was just watching, you know, if you still see these shows that say that they built the pyramids with a chisel and a round stone, dunk, dunk. I mean, you know, I guess they think if they repeat it over and over again, you're going to think, yeah, they were really, you know, crazy. But we cannot come close to building the pyramids now.
Yeah.
But then there's all the work of Joseph Davidovich that set himself out to looking at how the poured stone. And I said that from the beginning. How are you going to get all those stones up to the top of Machu Picchu? It's 12,000 feet up there.
Right, right.
And 14,000 feet to the top. And what about the Pyramid of Abu Roush? That they closed the road, and even the people in the village at the foot of this pyramid in Egypt don't know what's there. And they don't have anybody up there. There's no way to get up there. And it's because it blows the theory, because you'd have to get the pyramid up a mountain before you got it up the pyramid, right?
Oh.
And, you know, then they're going on about, you know, how they were so successful, you know, trying to recreate a little pyramid, and they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
They're not looking at the size of the stones, and so it's just, and you see scientist after scientist saying, oh, yeah, the evidence is there, oh, I know how they did it. And then you go to Easter Island, and they've got, you know, similar constructions to various places, like Sasuke Woman in Peru and Machu Picchu and various places. And you can see, I call it marshmallow stone. Like, it's like yeasted bread. So you remember when your mother was making buns?
Right.
And she'd separate them and put them into somewhere to keep warm, and the yeast would leaven the bread, and then they would all fit together. They'd all be nuzzled together. Right? And so that's part of the chemical curing. And so even though they're finding little seashells and whatnot inside stone in the Great Pyramid, it doesn't preclude the idea that they couldn't have started with some kind of sand or some kind of cement kind of concept. And you cannot tell the difference between a poured stone nowadays and something that's natural in some cases.
Mm.
And so I'm not saying that all the stone was poured, but I'm certainly thinking that the ones that have such tight joins that you can't even put a piece of paper or a razor blade between them must have yeasted into place.
Mm.
And so we really have to notice, you know, how these things align, you know, how Easter Island and the Nazca lines and Giza make a straight diagonal line, and you can join the points,
right.
You know, how there are pyramids all over the world that align to equinox, and certain things happen at equinox and various, you know, and everything, the stone circles at Adam's Calendar in South Africa where I went last year, you know, it... Equinox, solstice, everything is a marker for our place in the universe. So, you know, X marks the spot. This is where we are. And they all seem to understand this idea of the precession of the equinoxes of 26,000 years. And so we are at the darkest of the dark of the dark of the Iron Age. We're at the dark of the Amun hidden cycle in the larger cycles of Egyptian time.
Uh-huh.
And we're just about to turn the corner where all of the different cycles, the 2,000-year, 5,000-year, 26,000-year, and several billion-year cycles, are all coming to zero point at the same time. And I don't know if you've ever seen those things that Dan Winter put out of the alphabet and all these different cycles that spin around and make shapes, and it's like he's got the Heart Resonance Institute. But at some point, all of these different cycles flatten out and go to zero, and to me, that's like the chakras all aligning within us, within the planet, within the solar system, within the galaxy, and within the universe, and beyond. Okay, where it all goes to zero. So it's almost like a ladder where if everything's lined up, you can just go shooting straight out the top, right?
Right, right.
And so when it's all spinning and conforming, you can't. You're stuck inside that. And so I think that's the opportunity that's coming energetically. And that's waking up Gaia Sophia, Mother Earth as well. And I think that's going to be like Jacob's ladder. The ladder into the new place. It's the fact that everything goes to zero.
Huh. Interesting. Well, that sounds good to me. I'm ready to climb that ladder.
Right.
You know, this is definitely, as you said, it is the darkest of the dark of the dark. And
I've had several experiences when I was at Machu Picchu, for one. When I flew the Nazca lines, actually, it was like you go around one way, and they show everybody on the right side of the plane, you know, so you can take a picture. Then they flip over, and then they fly around the other way. But what you're actually doing is infinity signs in the air over each of these powerful sites, or glyphs, that are actually on iron. It's like what the Nazca lines are, what isolates that area in the mountains, is it's iron. It's a magnet. Place is magnetic.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's kind of the experience, too, of electromagnetic energy in Egypt. And everything's meant to be a transmission stone and taking the telluric energy and moving it. And so all of this is giving us the opportunity to shoot out through our crown chakra, which is basically an out-of-body experience. So if you can imagine going through the 3-foot passageways inside the Great Pyramid, your back is actually flat, right? And your crown chakra and your base chakra and all your chakras in between are all lining up. Well, that's what has to happen at the top of Machu Picchu, at Hanua Picchu. You climb and climb and climb, and you go down, down, down to the Temple of the Moon and up, up, up. And then you get to the top, and these stairs are kind of spiral. They're kind of crooked, and you've got your it's, again, the 3-foot height. And I just went shooting out my crown chakra. And I left my body because my lip goes all fuzzy and my hands and feet go tingly. So I take off my shoes and I put my camera in my boot and I thought, I don't sense there's something out there. And I pulled my camera out of my boot and just took pictures without even looking because I was kind of way in a trance. And you know, there were spaceships in those pictures.
Wow.
And so, you know, this is something we're probably a lot more well-versed in than we realize and we hide from ourselves. But many people have been having these experiences, and of course, the powers that be and the education system and everything else tells us not to talk about it and it's not real. And, I mean, they've managed to keep something suppressed like that. But I think it's the answer. I mean, not that I'm thinking, I don't like the idea that the aliens just came along and built the pyramids.
Right.
But I think that there was more sophisticated technology in other realms.
Yeah.
And just the way we channel now and can access Archangel Metatron or whatever, you know, we can access energies from places we were before.
Yeah.
Like, many people are having past life memories of living off planet. I was just on a radio show called Starseed Radio Academy, and they're talking about going to the Tetons and visiting ships and Arcturian, you know, masters and all that. And so that's not really that weird. I mean, it's weirder to think that we're completely alone.
Yes,
and all of it fits together in a worldwide sort of many, many, many different ancient sites, megalithic sites all over the world. And it's more unified than it is separate.
Yes.
But for some reason, the pieces haven't come together, but they are now.
Well, I think part of that is there's the dumbing down that's going on intentionally, and the misinformation, and the fact that our egos are encouraged to be separate, and that if we're made to look foolish, you know, that is the worst thing that a person can have happen when they're growing up as a child, and in adolescence, to be made to look foolish and be told you're crazy. Eventually people just shut up and they stop talking about the things that are real, and they go on to study things that are not real, which are lies in the material that's being published just to keep us from knowing the truth. So I agree with you, and since we're in this final ninth step of the Mayan calendar, this is the period of unity consciousness. If there ever was going to be a time when the people could come together, it seems that this would be a likely period to begin that process, because it doesn't seem like we have a lot of time left before we go over the Niagara Falls in a barrel.
That's right. Well, and you know that tomorrow is already the last day of the fifth night.
Wow.
We're already going to the sixth day.
My gosh.
Every 18 days we've been ratcheting through, and so each step goes 20 times faster than the step before.
I guess I was expecting, I'm always expecting something different than what happens. And
well, you can't predict. You know, I've been getting my transits done every year from my astrological transit. And so I go for my birthday, and they give me my transits, and I look, and I think, well, you know, okay, fine, so they're going to have this influence and that influence. But you don't know how that's going to manifest.
Right, right.
So retroactive astrology is more useful. So then
yes.
You read, you know, the last 3 months
and
go, oh, I know what that means, and I know what that means. So retroactively, you can define what the influences were.
Yes.
But you can never predict what's going to happen. Like, even if somebody's been lying to you, you know, you can't guess which lie, kind of thing.
Right.
But when something happens and you realize you've been betrayed, then you go, aha!
Yes.
I picked up on that and that and that and that and that, and then all the puzzle pieces.
And then it all fits together.
It all fits together, and you understand. And so we're picking up on a lot of stuff, but we're not exactly sure how it's going to manifest. But I still think that the most important thing we can do for ourselves is learn to listen to our intuition. And I've always said, you know, if I was somebody's angel and I kept telling them to bring their umbrella because it was going to rain, they never listened to me, I'd want to go help somebody else.
Right.
So, and it's like a muscle. So if we listen to our intuition.
Yes.
You know, but sometimes it takes years and years and years, like particularly with all the stuff on Egypt and all the misinformation. Oh, my God.
I read
the stuff and it turns my stomach, and then I leave it for a few years, and then I come back and read it again, and, you know, still trying to sort the seeds.
Yeah.
And then something will happen that's a major breakthrough, and then I'll go, I knew it.
Yep.
I knew it.
Yep.
I didn't know what I knew, but there's more and more and more of that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, definitely you're destined to open and unlock the keys to the mysteries that are here to be unfolded for all of us. So you're right on the cutting edge, but there's no question about it.
Well, and I also think it's time to put our heads together. Like, at first I thought, well, why co-author a book? But it's motivating to talk to somebody about the material, and I'll read this and you read that and back and forth and back and forth.
Mm-hmm,
what
mm-hmm.
do you think? What do you think? And now we've got such tools that we can record, like a Skype session with I Show You,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, so you can see both people on the thing, and
we send each
other a picture, and we can discuss the picture. I'm opening it live, and then it becomes a little video that we can send each other and transcribe.
Yeah.
And so what William and I are doing is we're skipping the middleman. It's anything that has to do with the old system, I'm really not that interested in. And so we're, instead of getting a publisher, like I've got a strong agent in New York that's asking for more material, and we've decided to do a video book. So instead of flat pictures, we can put animations and text.
Oh.
Video footage and text. And if you want to print it, I suppose we can put like a still picture in place of the video.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I've got all this material, and I've been building this stuff for a long time, and it just breaks my heart to think about taking a 3D animation and turning it into a black and white 2D picture.
Oh, no, please.
You know,
no.
Forget it. And
no.
so...
No.
And William's doing video blogs, and, you know, it's fantastic. And that can go straight up onto YouTube. So people really want video, and that's how interactive you were going to be speaking in video and creating social action and then showing each other what we've got through video. Mm-hmm. So it's the way, and let's just hope we can hang on to internet.
that's the question.
So, I mean, they're really trying to restrict it and shut it down.
Oh, yeah, well, there. I noticed something that was going on in Canada. You know, and there, and of course, it's going on all over the world. But it's happening here too. It's getting stomped on left and right, and you can tell because certain sites are no longer existing. All of a sudden, you wonder, well, I wonder what happened to this one, and I wonder what happened to that one, and all of a sudden, you're limited to, you know, a handful of sites that, you know, maybe aren't the ones that you remember having been around. So, and they know that we have short memories, so. Unless we keep a diary of everything that we do in life, then we don't remember things, especially things that we should remember, like the past and the mistakes that that have been made and keep being made. So,
well, I have a very good memory.
No,
and
I would think
me by. And so, you know, I can remember details of various student papers and. Huh. You know, the mark they got last time and their performance and that sort of thing. But, you know, and I think that cultivating our memory is a really important thing. But stress, fear, grief can take our memory.
Yeah.
Lots of things can.
That's right. That's right.
Including medication.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
But the thing is, you know what? They haven't killed us off. They've been trying to kill us off forever. We are so resilient, and I think about Egyptian people and everything they've been through. They are the most resilient, good-natured.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wear their hearts on their sleeve. They're amazing people, and you can't hold them down.
Mm.
You know, and there's, you know, we shouldn't go down either.
Right.
But I think that this antidepressants and antipsychotics and all of this stuff that they're coming up with, it's just, you know, but the thing is, the whole system's being exposed.
Mm-hmm.
Right, college conspiracy showing how students are graduating with degrees in worthlessness and they end up being slaves to the student loan and how unfair that is and tuition keeps going up and, you know, the DSM-4 has got all these, you know, all they have to do is come up with the name of a disorder and then they can assign a drug to it and then they're making the ages of onset of antidepressants and antipsychotic going lower in terms of pregnant women still being on this. Their children are born with something, they want to give infants antidepressants and antipsychotics. Well, this is about ruining people.
Well,
you
cannot
get off them. I don't have a single good word to say about any of them.
And let's not forget vaccines.
No, and vaccines. I stood between the needle and my son, and my son was never sick a day in his life.
Right.
He never had a cold. He never had anything wrong with him. He never missed a day of work because he was sick, ever, ever, ever. And I say that's because he didn't get vaccinated.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with that. And now,
but how many people can say they never had a vaccination?
Well,
I'll tell you, when I went to Afghanistan, before the war, when women wore miniskirts and they were doctors and professionals.
Oh my!
In 1977, how the world has changed.
Oh my goodness!
And there was a certain vaccine that they were insisting everybody have. And so they had these, and again, I was on a tour, and going from London to Kathmandu on a camping trip, if you can believe it, when I was 22 years old.
Oh, my.
I was away for 14 months, and that was one part of the trip. And they had these long medical tables set up, and they had these, you know, needles, the surgical needles with a little bit of rust that they were using over and over again. And I looked at this lady. I just leaned forward, and everybody was, you know, sticking their arm out. Everybody was sticking their arm out and letting them put it in there, you know, the needle in there. And I looked at this lady, and I said, how much? You're not putting that in my arm.
Yeah.
And she started to protest, and I just looked right at her. I said, you are not putting that in my arm. You tell me how much. And I don't know if I paid her or not. I think she just blinked and let me go.
Oh, wow. You got off lucky.
But, you know, like every other person did it.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're like monkeys, you know. Monkey see, monkey do. If they tell us you to do something, you do it because you think you're supposed to.
I'm not so sure we evolved from monkeys, but they monkey see, monkey do. They keep telling us we're just like monkeys. It's like, and they keep on using rats for psychological tests and telling us we're just like rats, too. Sorry, we're not.
Right, right. We're actually divine beings that are having
a human
experience.
I think we came down from above, not... up from below.
Right, right. And that's about time we recognized our sovereignty and started taking it back and claiming it for our own.
Well, and, you know, the thing is, when we're in nature and when we're, you know, communing with Mother Earth, mm. and, you know, feeling the breeze on our face and putting our toe in the ocean or however we manage, we are not part of the destructive cycle.
Right.
But when we're sitting with electromagnetic charge on us and, mm-hmm. you know, just the passiveness of TV and the repetition of silly commercials, you know, pretty
yeah.
much if it's on TV being in a commercial, it's a false product and somebody's making money off thinking you need it.
Right.
Off
right.
making you think you need it, sorry.
Right.
And so the best way to break all those cycles is to make sure we have our feet on the ground. We're walking, you know, bare feet somewhere every once in a while.
Mm.
You know, and not every once in a while, immersing ourselves in that.
Yeah.
Do you know that there is a nature deprivation syndrome?
Oh, no.
For kids that sit in apartment buildings who
never
don't touch the ground, don't go to the park,
oh,
living on synthetics.
Oh, dear.
And the other thing, I might have mentioned this to you before, there's two things that the solar energy that's changing our DNA, upgrading our DNA, cannot penetrate through. PVC plastic and aluminum.
Oh, I did not know.
Our houses are wrapped in PVC plastic.
And you're right about that.
When we're indoors, we are not getting access to the positive solar energies. And, of course, they tell us the sun's going to kill you, and so they give you chemicals to put on your skin so you don't get the vitamin D. And,
right.
You know, and
right.
there's more MS in cold climates because you don't get as much sunshine. And, that you know, then they tell us, don't be in the sun, don't be in the sun. So, you know, they got it really sewn up. So pretty much what they tell you is basically wrong. And
do the opposite. Do the opposite.
Do the opposite. What did I hear somebody say on the radio the other day? They said, you want to know how to, oh, it was Jim Mars on Coast to Coast. Do you want to know how to tell when a politician's lying? And George Nuri says, yeah, when? They're moving their mouth and words are coming out. That's how you know they're lying.
Well, that's the truth. I mean,
that about sums it up.
It really does. It really does. And they're all in the same boat, and the whole system has to be brought down. It's there's no way you can fix it. It's part of the old paradigm. But I just wanted to say one thing about your idea about the sun. My dog goes out every day, and she will sit in the sun, even though it's hot, for about 10 minutes, and they get a sun bath. And so I watch her to find out what she's doing, and then I try to mimic her because I know that she's doing something that I'm not tuned into as well as she is instinctively. So she'll sit out there even though she's hot, and she just puts her head up in the sun, and she looks serene. And so I try to do that myself.
Good. Yeah, no, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And it feels good. I mean, we feel good when we lie in the sun.
Yeah, yeah, I always used to. It does feel more intense now, though. I notice that the heat is, it's a slightly different resonance or flavor.
Well, there's something to that. I've been renovating, and I've had some concrete poured, and the concrete guys were trying to tell me that, you know, 20 years ago, concrete didn't deteriorate the same way, and that there's something about the intensity of the sun that's deteriorating it faster.
Ah.
And you look around, and it's true. There's something about that. So,
yeah.
I mean, but the thing is, it may be tuning us into another level as well. I mean,
yeah.
we are physically evolving in a new way.
Yes.
And it has to do with the interaction of the sun. And then look at Nefertiti and Akhenaten. They said to everybody that they were crazy and deformed and all this stuff. But they didn't worship the Aten. They understood solar energy.
Right.
And then they had the hands coming off the rays of the sun. And they said that was monotheism, and they worshipped the sun. That's not what they were doing. But they did understand how the sun was absolutely crucial in terms of making everything grow, a plant, a flower, and us.
Oh, yeah. And that the sun is a conscious being, a conscious entity, you know, in its own right.
Exactly.
So, and of course, Gaia Sophia is another one, and I know John Lamb Lash has been talking a lot about lately about the Sophia's journey, and it's been an interesting presentation of information about what she's up to. So,
well, he calls it the correction.
Yeah.
And he's right on now. Did you listen the other day? I sent you that piece that he had made a statement on August 30th.
Mm-hmm.
Did you listen to that?
Yes, I did.
Because you're the only one. I sent it to about 20 people, and as soon as they went to go in there, they said too many downloads. So I received it on the same day as he spoke it, and he's sitting in Andalusia, Spain, so he's 9 hours ahead.
Oh.
And we were Skyping back and forth, and he's just waiting to see how that's going to go. But that's very important what he was saying. And he also said it in a way that's very what if, and let's invite the idea, and
yes,
we can consider it. It's not dogma shoving anything down anybody's throat.
Yes, I really like that about him. He has such a spirit of adventure and mystery and discovery and reinventing the mystique of the divine feminine, which is right underneath our feet and in the Milky Way. The Milky Way, I mean, come on, with the milk, Mother's milk.
Sure. Well, it's the milk of Nui, of the goddess.
Yeah,
her breast is the milk of the human. Yeah, and you know the Egyptian, they were topless. You know, they weren't all embarrassed about the truth of things.
Right.
Well, one of the things that I really respect about John Lash is that he doesn't travel, he doesn't do conferences, he sits with nature and writes and then speaks out. So it takes a lot of courage to, you know, just post something that's never been said before, because most of us are copycats.
Right.
You hear something that somebody else said and you repeat it. Well, that's not original. That's repeated.
Right.
You know, and so many people were repeating what Zachariah Sitchin said, repeating what, you know, the scholars said. And they're not doing anything to verify.
Right. And just taking it on like, okay, this is true, this is true, this is true. But, you know, over time, I know for myself I've gotten more discerning, and I listen with kind of a critical ear, and I don't take it all in. There's a certain point everything will go la-di-da-di-da, eek. And that when I hit that eek, I stop and look at what that information is, and often it's something that doesn't resonate with my own cosmic view of things. So,
and that doesn't discount everything that didn't make you go eek.
Right, right.
But there could be five little spots.
Right.
And the thing is, even on television, like they'll take a script, and then they'll write a line in that makes it look like they agree with the war, or that it's a good thing to go and fight.
Yeah.
And then they carry on with their storyline. Well, that's implanting, you know, the agenda somehow in something else that might, you know, generally be quite fine.
Right.
But
right.
we've got to really stay awake in order to be able to catch.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many violent movies coming out, just nothing but gun shooting and killing and murder and oh my gosh.
Well, they're trying to lower our tolerance for violence.
Yeah.
Now, I will not watch violence.
And I won't either.
And I won't go to the theater if it's violent. I get up and walk. Even in Avatar, I walked out when they were coming to take down that World Tree.
Oh,
I left.
That
I
was.
I don't want my psyche exposed to it. I wasn't allowed to watch anything violent when I was a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I just never have. And so people laugh at me, oh, yeah, can't take Carmen to a movie because, you know, she's not going to be able to take it. I mean, just a little blood. But it's the principle of the thing.
Right,
I really don't want my psyche exposed to it because I know it affects things. Now, I'll tell you, you know, I've got a lot of degrees. And in my early psychology training, I actually did a study. And now it's got to be 25 years ago already. I'm getting old. but it was on the effect of violence on television. And I actually was doing a literature review of research that had been done. And half of the researchers said, oh, well, it's no big deal. It doesn't really affect anybody. But the other half said, wait two generations.
Uh-huh.
And if you see an average of like 10,000 deaths a week,
uh-huh.
You know, and you just become less and less attuned to it and desensitized, and it has horrible effects when you become unconscious of it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, the other thing is that I think what they do is there's a scriptwriter's fantasy. So they'll start out with something that's really intriguing and probably true, like Stargate or something like that. Then it goes to the scriptwriter's fantasy where everybody's killing each other. But what that's doing is it's wiring us that, you know, we think we're interested in the positive part and the beginning part that takes us into the stars and the galaxy, but then they cross-reference it with violence, and so it contaminates the intuition of the goodness.
That's right.
And they repeat. And it's either that, or it's silly, and people are lying to each other.
Yeah.
You know, we're having a discussion and we're feeling terrible. Somebody comes in, how are you? Fine. You know, and it goes from one lie to the next, and how you keep the lie going. So there, you know, what we have when we think, you think you learn from modeling, which is why in the olden days the shoemaker's children would become shoemakers, right?
Right.
And what we're being modeled is how to cheat, how to lie, how to steal.
Oh, yes, and kill.
And kill.
Yeah, without conscience.
Well, because they're training kids on video games, literally.
Right.
The people who are doing the fighter pilots dropping the bombs, the simulation is a video game.
That's right.
And
that's right.
They don't think they're killing anybody real when they're playing video games for years and years and decades.
That's right.
And then they put real stuff in. Oh, it's just ridiculous. I mean, and to make a profit, they make more of a profit in a day of war than they do in a year of peace.
I was just going to say, you know, we used to, as a group, we used to protest the wars, and I guess we just reached a point where they just pretty much tromped all over us, and we can't do that anymore because we're fighting wars all over the world where we don't belong, and that money, which could, you know, be used to replenish our own coffers and change the whole face of the world in terms of free energy and services for everybody. I mean, it's just appalling.
How about this? I did some calculations.
Okay.
The bailout, if they had forgiven anybody who had a mortgage, and given them their house, the same amount of money that they gave the bankers to put in their pockets.
And
if they cut the military spending, every single student loan could be forgiven. So imagine, we give you a house and a free education.
Yep.
And then let's cut income tax, too, because that's unconstitutional. All our income tax in Canada and the States goes for interest payments to the Federal Reserve as a privately owned corporation. So we cut the income tax because that's just feeding them.
Right.
Okay,
well, the beast
so
has
no
to...
income tax,
yes.
Your house is free, and your education is free. You
mm-hmm.
tell me, do you think Americans would be doing better?
No, my goodness.
Hello?
Exactly.
You think they could stay home with their kids? You know, go to the park, go to nature, go camping,
yes.
go do something else. Yes, we are slaves, and what we're doing is we're putting our money into their hands.
That's right.
And then we're paying for our own enslavement.
That's right.
Like,
and
when I went to Taiwan, I declared myself non-resident because I understood that if I was paying 8% tax and making a certain amount of money there, that the Canadian government was going to expect the balance of what I would have paid them, unless you say I don't live here now. And when I came back, it took 3 weeks to register with all the places that where I was going to give my money to. Car insurance, home insurance, life insurance, utility bills, right?
Oh, yeah.
Income tax. Here's where my money's going to go. Medical insurance. Beep, 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 beep. And it's like it's disgusting. And I was free. And I used to look at my paycheck when I worked for the Calgary Board of Education and say, if I had all the money that I earn, I would be laughing.
Right.
Because I was making really good money, but it's decimated, right?
Oh,
anyway,
yeah.
So I found a situation living abroad, 8% tax, great, they can have it. You're going to build me a road, whatever you want to do with that, go ahead. You know, but utility bills were negligible, and all my money was mine. Everything, you know, I didn't have to pay room and board or my apartment.
Be.
I didn't have to pay for anything. They flew me home. They bought me computers and cameras and everything.
Yeah.
And the money they paid me was by disposable income.
Right.
So people said, oh, you must really like Taiwan. You keep staying there. It's like, well, I didn't think I liked it at all. I'd been to 32 countries before I got there, and I was, like, completely full of culture shock. Now I've been to 52. But I just had culture shock, something terrible. I couldn't understand what was going on, and I was a blueberry in a strawberry patch. I didn't know any expatriates. It was just me and them. So I didn't really think I liked it, but the deal was so sweet, I stayed.
Yeah. Huh, interesting. But don't you find that the human heart is the same the world over?
Everybody wants the same thing, love and respect.
Exactly.
Well, a lot of people are a lot nicer
in other countries.
They sure are.
Well, I tend to agree with you. I spent some time in Mexico, and they were the most wonderful people in the world, just biggest hearts and sweet and loving and caring, and they had a sense of family, and I know that it's like that in many of the romance countries, and like you said, in Egypt as well. That's a very old country. And I suspect that Iran has some wonderful people.
I've been to Iran.
Have you? What did you think of it?
Well, it's similar to, well, I mean, now it's all changed.
Yeah.
Seemed that the women were a little more repressed when I was there.
Right.
But, you know, they're very collectivist. The family is the most important thing.
Yeah.
And they will lay themselves down for their family. Here, if we have a problem, you know, if we have an argument with our mother, we don't go home for Christmas.
Oh, no, right.
We're very individualist, and then we spend our lives networking.
Yeah, right. Right. My, my, my. Well, we certainly have covered quite a few little issues that are going on today. And I was just watching a program on Red Ice Radio about the second space program, and that was a fascinating
The journey. Secret space program, you mean?
The one that exists without our knowledge.
Yes.
Yeah. And
that we pay for.
That we pay for, right. The one at NASA, Never Straight Answer, is the cover-up. And the true space program is already so far ahead of anything that we can imagine, and it's kept so close to the cards are held so closely that we don't even realize that they're traveling all the time to the various planets in our solar system, that their bases on the Mars, Moon, and possibly Jupiter and Saturn and beyond. And so, you know, this is going to be a big shock when and if it comes out. Enough people have blown the whistle on it to get it out to those who are interested. But
Yes, the 100th monkey.
Yeah, yeah.
There we go being monkeys again, but you know what that,
right.
What that syndrome means.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe we should fill in, you know, I can hear people saying, what did John Lamb last say? Because a lot of people couldn't access that.
Oh, okay.
So he was talking about the World Trade Center. So the official story, may I?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so the official story is that airplanes drove into the towers, started office fires, and then that caused the buildings to collapse.
Right.
However, engineers know that they would have fallen like trees, and that just didn't make sense.
Right.
So for a week before the whole thing went, before 911, there were elevator workers in there, and they could have easily, you know, cut the steel girders and put little explosives, and then it would be like a controlled demolition, like when they destroy a hospital or something like that.
Right.
However, there wasn't enough material that collapsed. Like the pile from the size of the towers was too little.
Right.
And they worked really hard. Now they have all this security around it, like they already fell down, you know, like, and they don't want people to be snooping around to know. And Dr. Judy Wood was doing all this work with the idea that it was some kind of sophisticated, high-level, free energy with interference patterns, working with, and I can't explain how it works, but we have this scalar technology, this free energy now being used against humanity, and it would have vaporized parts of the building, which is why there wasn't very much debris.
Yes.
Okay? And so then he goes on to say, well, what if we're always looking outside of ourselves and thinking that crop circles are created by aliens outside of ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. And Graham Hancock says we don't need extraterrestrials to answer the questions. It's interterrestrials.
Mm-hmm.
So John Lamb Lash is saying, what if we have this technology, it's the same technology that creates crop circles, high heat that doesn't destroy the plant, that allows for this interweaving and these hugely sophisticated patterns that are formed in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
With nothing visible around it. Well, that energy is being beamed from somewhere, and it could be used for the positive aspects of humanity.
Right.
And so he was putting out a call saying, well, give us a sign. If you understand Nikola Tesla, if you understand Faraday, and different kinds of energy that has been discovered and then suppressed.
Yes.
Because basically anybody who leaks the energy, the technology gets killed. And they want to be, and that was the whole thing. Like Tesla's stuff was supposed to give us free energy, free radio, free everything.
Well,
and then they wanted to make a profit on it.
Right.
And then they started using his energy against us.
Right.
And then keeping it secret.
Yeah, oh yes, and then taking it further, and now they've gone so far beyond us with the corporations and the military-industrial complex that it probably is reminiscent of a Star Wars episode. And nobody would believe it because we've been kept in the dark ages with these boxy cars when we should have had technology that allowed free energy for all of our houses, our cars, flying cars, the whole thing. And they just meter it out in dribs and drabs.
Right. Yeah, so they can sell a new version of a computer, a new version of something.
Yeah.
You know, a flat-screen TV or whatever. No, I understand that completely. But the thing is that, Lance, let's change our language in here because we are onto it.
Right.
And even though there's a lot of people that aren't, you know, the way my life works is I'm living in...
Running out of time.
Oh, okay. So I was just going to say I'm living in this beautiful place and I've got, you know, I talk to people like you, and then the rest of the time I'm creating. And
right.
Does that mean we're finished? That was the beep, was that we're done?
We have just about a minute to wrap it up.
Okay. Yeah, so we can spend time with like-minded people.
Yes.
We can have interesting discussions with people who are well-read. Enough people do already realize this. The guy sitting on the plane next to you could know, and they do.
Yeah.
We know we're being lied to. We know Obama was promising change and hope, and he can sell hope, but there's no content in that. And I think we're about done being lied to, so I think there's a lot to look forward to.
I do, too, and I think you're one of the people that's helping us to do that. So I want to thank you for being back on the show. I'm sorry it went by so fast. People can find you at www.pyramidcode.com, yes?
Yes, and interactive-u.com, and you can sign up. And then when we're ready to launch, you'll get notified.
Wonderful. Well, Carmen, it's been a delight again to talk to you, and I always love having you back. And have a wonderful trip when you go in September. And say a little prayer for me when you're in the big pyramid.
Okay, we'll be transmitting to you.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.